Hey everybody, and welcome back to Pennsylvania Life Legends and Lore. As always, I am Holly.
And I'm Ethan.
And today we have part two of a part three series for you guys on the Lost Gold of Dent's Run. So before we get into what we're going to talk about today, if you guys are listening and you just happen to jump on and you're catching part two, you may want to take a pause and go back to part one and listen to that first. That way you're getting everything in order of how we're discussing it, and you know that way everything kind of makes sense. Like I said, part one we talked about before. We discussed, you know, the treasure and how it came to be, as far as why it is in Pennsylvania, and you know, some treasure hunters who were after it, as well as the FBI who were on a dig. So today, we're going to jump into a lawsuit that is kind of between the FBI and the Parada family, who are the finders keepers. This is the update of where we are currently as far as the dig goes. Also want to apologize if Ethan and I sound a little goofy. We're all hit with sinus stuff right now, so we sound a little congested and off, but it's still us. It may not sound like us, but it's us. So, although the FBI asserted that they came up empty-handed, the Parada's lawyer, who is Bill Cluck, is successfully suing for access to government emails and communications that are pertaining to the dig. And then, initially, the DCNR, which is the Pennsylvania Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, and the State Office of Open Records rejected his request for records of any communication concerning these excavations. So both agencies said that those records were off limits because of a federal court order that sealed all the information regarding the dig, which has been classified by the feds as an ongoing criminal probe. However, after appealing this, it was ruled that Cluck can have those records under the state's right to know law and the Federal Freedom of Information Act. So those documents show that the federal law enforcement was indeed after buried treasure. So since Elk County site was state-owned land, the FBI had to secure a federal court order to gain access. And the legal maneuvering generated emails between K.T. Newton, who is an assistant U.S. attorney in Philadelphia, and Audrey Miner, a chief lawyer for the Pennsylvania Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, that DCNR. So we believe the cache itself is in the neighborhood of a 3x5x8 to a 5x5x8 foot area, which was written by Newton in a 2018 email that was marked confidential. On March 13, 2018, Miner bluntly asked Newton in an email, "Can you please provide the basis upon which the Office of the United States Attorney asserts that the gold, if found, belongs to the federal government?" Newton replied that a federal affidavit in the case was sealed. She instead offered to discuss this generally on the phone, according to an email record released by the state under court order. On March 16, 2018, 2 days after the dig ended, Newton emailed Miner that we all are disappointed and scratching our heads over the several scientific test results. It's unclear what she meant, but the U.S. Attorney's Office in Philadelphia considers the matter to be closed. On March 28th, Miner asked Newton for an update on the federal investigation, telling her the gold story still has legs and the DCNR is now getting a lot of gold diggers interested in Dent's Run. In her reply, Newton told Miner, "For your knowledge only, we have no other scientific evidence other than what the excavation has been based on." Miner emailed back, "I guess you can't come right out and state that there is no gold to be found at Dent's Run." "Unfortunately, we cannot," the prosecutor replied. So according to court filings, the FBI told Finders Keepers that the EnviroScan had detected a buried object in a large metal target around 9 to 7 tons in mass. There are documented indicators that Finders Keepers was shut out of the treasure hunt it initiated. So the FBI has refused to confirm why exactly they went digging. In written statements, the FBI says only that they had court-authorized permission to excavate what they thought might be a cultural heritage site. That doesn't make any sense. That doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-mm.
I wonder how they got it deemed to say that. Like,
because it's the government, like, and they can say whatever they want.
Why would it be a cultural heritage site? Like, that's bizarre.
Because it's the government and they can say whatever they want.
This is one of the arguments in the conspiracy. Like, what is possibly a cultural heritage site there?
Right.
And
how are they having permission to dig there? Because somebody thinks that they found treasure, that all of a sudden it's a cultural heritage site.
And also, why is the FBI involved in a cultural heritage site?
When that's true, too.
Their whole purpose is to prevent, essentially, internal terrorism. And
what would they have any purpose in digging for that? Like, why would that be a reason for them to dig? That doesn't make sense.
They needed the money, and it's the government, and they'll do what they want.
Yeah, that part just throws me off a little bit.
Just a little bit.
It's part of the argument on, like...
I'm on board, like, with that, because that makes no sense to me. Yeah, that's a just, like, an out-of-left-field, like...
Yeah, mm-hmm. So essentially...
They just, like, stamped a tag on it, like, we don't know what to call this, so...
Right, either they didn't know what to call it, or they don't want to share.
Right.
So they're saying, oh, it's all sealed, and it was a cultural heritage site. Yeah. That we found nothing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bizarre. Mm-hmm. That's all I have. Bizarre.
Yeah, it's odd.
So as of the end of 2023, the lawsuit is still ongoing. Kluck is still waiting on documents from the DCNR and the FBI. And through court proceedings, the government eventually admitted that it possesses 2,700 documents and 17 videos relating to the dig. So the information's out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's just whether or not anybody will ever have access to it. Probably not. Never know. So federal officials stated it will take them 4 years to provide Kluck with all of that material. Why would it take 4 years if they have it all? It's here, good. Every like 30 days, here's a page.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a page. Like, I don't know. Why do they have to drag things out? Like, why does it have to take so long?
They
gotta
take the documents out that they don't want him seeing.
Well, there you go. So busy with, mm-hmm. you know.
But
I have a lot of opinions on this that I feel are not appropriate for the podcast, so I'm just refraining from.
You can't refrain. This is our platform.
I have opinions outside that.
You need to voice your opinions.
The government itself.
Well, we may not need to get into
that. That's right. I don't have a lot to say in this, but detail, I just think there's a lot of deception in the government, and they will do what they want, and they will only show people what they want to show, so.
True.
They're probably only showing him the articles that have absolutely nothing in it. Other than general, we didn't find anything, or we didn't find anything today, or we didn't find this today. Not the, by the way, we found $48 million worth of gold, or whatever the amount was.
Yeah.
Sitting in a hole, that email is just magically gone, and the FBI is now $48 million richer.
So, Meg, interjecting here, because you've heard my voice a couple times. Ethan, what you're saying, it's quite on target with what we're going to talk about the next episode.
We're just getting way too far ahead.
Because that is a whole part of the conspiracy.
I just know how the government works, and history repeats itself, and I'm not going to bring up specific events.
They have the means to keep the information from us, and what are we going to do about it?
Right.
Kluck is hoping that the information requested from the DCNR includes the search warrant the FBI would have presented to the agency before starting the excavation. That's not to guarantee that he will, but hopeful. And that should confirm what the FBI was looking for and its grounds for wanting to conduct the search. So if it has that information in there, he's probably never going to get it.
Right, because they've already said it was a cultural heritage search. So if they have anything that
else in there, then that, right.
You know that they've been lying.
Right. So it is possible that the DCNR file might also contain a more detailed report on what was found in the scientific survey conducted at the site before the actual dig occurred. So if you remember from part one, you know, they found, like, that...
They detected something that they thought had the...
Properties of either gold or tungsten.
Tungsten mm-hmm. is the only other
right.
metal mm-hmm.
so
has
they
properties.
Had
7 to 9 tons.
Right. So they saw that, which then allowed them to dig because they saw something there. And so it would be nice to see if they could have, he could have a report as far as that information as well and what that actual survey was. Mm-hmm. So Kluck had stated, "I'm just following the law and trying to find out what's going on and why people are playing games. If in fact there was nothing there, I want to know, as do we all."
Mm-hmm.
So in 2022, the FBI released a statement publicly acknowledging for the first time that it had been looking for gold in Dent's Run. However, it continues to deny finding anything. There's also a Facebook page that was created by the Parada family to keep the public updated on the case, which we can also, we can include that when we mm-hmm. post the podcast. That way you guys can check it out and kind of see what the updates are. I mean, obviously we're as up to date as we can be for now, but, you know, that could always change since this is ongoing. Mm-hmm. So their update on 11/29/23 states that the federal court case in Washington, D.C. for the FBI files was on hold until January 22nd of 24. Then as of January 30th of 24, the family is awaiting word from the federal judge to see if the case is dismissed or if they will be moving forward. If the case is dismissed, the Paradas have enough information to have the Senate investigate this missing gold. If their case continues, they hope to get the rest of the FBI files that will prove a night dig occurred and how much gold was removed. So that's kind of where the lawsuit is headed. Mm-hmm. So just kind of waiting to see if it gets dismissed or if it's going to continue and what kind of documentation Kluck can get. So this one's interesting because it is ongoing. Like, we don't have, obviously we're going to go through our thoughts and our opinions about it, but you know, things could still go one way or another and find out more or less about what's going on here in the near future. And obviously, if we do find out any more information, we can kind of keep you guys posted on this one and do updates on it and kind of see if anything big happens, where it's at.
And also for anyone listening, Meg again here, the Facebook page, the family has, they post fairly regular updates. I haven't checked it recently, but they post fairly regular updates about the project because, you know, and the process, the legal process that they're going through. Mm-hmm. They believe something was taken.
Mm-hmm. It's just sad that they have to go through all of this just to try and find some answers. Like, they were there. Mm-hmm. Like, it's sad that they weren't able to see it and be a part of it to know what was going on.
They should have just dug themselves and then they could have paid them off with all the gold that they found and still came out ahead.
Well, the fact that they were told they would be allowed to see it and then were
denied
access by armed FBI personnel.
Right.
Like, we're like,
you don't just do that like for nothing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not to spoil the next episode, but there are several different viewpoints on this.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are like, oh yeah, there's absolutely gold and they took it. Some people are like, something was there, probably wasn't gold, but something was
clearly there. There was something there that, like, the FBI had interest in because they just left a hole.
And they don't just come out for nothing. And again, once again, like I think we said last time, like, if there was nothing there, you would have filled the hole back in.
Right. Right.
You would have had stuff to fill the hole back in, but there's a gaping hole there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And you clearly actually, they removed something.
Yeah, but what was it? Something was removed.
Right.
And you can actually go and find the spot on the state land. Even to this day, there's a big gap in the landscape where it was removed. Well, something was removed. Right. And then other people think that the whole thing is just like, no, there's not gold, or they didn't find anything.
Right.
But again,
but then why, like, clearly there was something there that made them dig.
Right.
Again, I think we touched base on this in the last episode, but our technology is far enough along that, like, we could determine that it was made of a material that was either gold or
tungsten.
Like, that's pretty specific in itself to know that, okay, we're digging for something that is like that. So is our technology wrong? Or, like, it just doesn't make sense to me, like, how they can go through all this and say, yes, there's a reason that we're going to dig, but no, now it's just a cultural heritage site, and
I'm pretty
sure. What in the world were we digging for?
Yeah.
And
it could have been tungsten, because I'm pretty sure the military uses tungsten in some of their weapons.
But then why wouldn't they just say that?
Because they probably have to pay somebody for it.
Well, and so to...
If they don't want to pay somebody for it, they're not going to pay somebody for it. It's on state game land. Oh, well, then we went into that too, because it's kind of on...
And to the point that you just said about, like, the scams. So initially when all this happened, I think we said, touched on this last time, EnviroScan was like, yeah, we stand by our findings.
Mm-hmm.
And with the lawsuit, the FBI have silenced them. The FBI said, do not comment. So the rep doesn't comment. So we talk about that. Like, that's an information.
They made them sign non-disclosure agreements.
But that, you know, that's a little sketchy.
It's very sketchy. Why would you do, what, like, why do you need to cover up your tracks?
Like if there's nothing, why can't you talk about nothing?
Go through all those steps? Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Just show the evidence that there was nothing.
Right. But they won't. It's not going to happen.
Right.
Until this is all said and done, it will not happen. It'll just become a blip that everybody knows what happens, but
so they the cover FBI everything up because they can't falsify documents and that says there's nothing there. They can just make things up and put a stamp on it. And
I'm just saying, look back at history and other large events that they could just say it's going to happen and nothing will happen. They could end up saying, oh, yep, oops, we made a mistake, and nothing will happen out of it. These people, the Klux, will not get their money.
That's not the Klux. The Klux is...
Or I'm sorry, the Paradas will not get their money.
Ethan's delusional.
The Paradas will not get their money, and they'll basically be told, hey, suck it up and deal with it, or you go away forever.
That's just, like, it's just annoying. Like, I hate things that are, like, left open. So this must be terrible for them to have to
I don't think it is left open. I think it's pretty obvious that the FBI... found something, they took it out, and they're not going to tell you because...
But it's left open then.
Not really.
Because they found something, they won't tell you what it was.
You just are...
They don't tell you.
You don't know what it is, but they found something.
That's still left open. I need a resolution. I need to know what it was, how much of it was, what it was from.
They found
gold. You know, this could be gold from something else.
They found gold, or they found tungsten, and they're not going to tell you the exact amount that they found because they're either pocketing it or using it to... fund something
that
else that they're doing.
That is left open and it drives me nuts. So to actually be involved in something like this, like, we're just talking about it, but to actually be involved in something like this and not have, like, a clear-cut end to it.
Yeah, when the FBI listens to this, they're probably going to get a letter that says, stop talking about it or else.
If our podcast gets out there enough that happens, I will just give ourselves a pat on the back.
They're constantly listening to everything.
I was just going to say, like, there's so many other...
It could be in our podcast. I could have said something now that they're listening on my phone, and now they're flagging because I'm talking about this on the podcast.
Oh.
Or just like you. Let's face it. They're listening to everything.
Freedom of speech.
That doesn't exist.
There are so many other venues talking about this story that I think they probably hit those first. But, yeah. But that would be amazing.
It would be. Like, yeah. That means our podcast is taking off and we are successful. And we are reaching people and they like to listen to us. And kudos.
And then it will be immediately unsuccessful because the FBI will say, yeah, you need to stop what you're doing or else.
Okay, then we'll move on to a different story.
Maybe.
I'm excited for part three because I did put a little nugget in the end that is, I have a theory.
Okay.
And I would put my theory in at the end.
Okay.
About what I think... what I think happened.
Okay.
But I'm not going to share it now. You'll have to wait. But what I kind of think.
Yeah.
The reality of the situation.
Yeah. So this was a shorter episode. We just wanted to kind of lay basis of where things are at right now with the lawsuit that we have going on. I did want to give a little shout out. So we did have a listener reach out, Rich, who had heard about this story before, and it reminded him of another buried treasure story, but instead of gold, it was silver. And ironically, it brings in an individual named Blackbeard, which we all go to the pirate, but that's not who we're referring to. But it was buried on the Cinnamahoning Creek during the colonial times, and which is kind of some of the same general area as Dent's Run. And he said he's heard that story a few times. And there's also a song that's named Blackbeard about the story by Van Wagner, which Ethan tells me is a
local guy.
A local guy. So that is interesting, and we might have to kind of dig into that a little bit to kind of see if there are, what that story is about. I know, Meg, you had said that you had read a little bit about it while you were looking up the Dense Run.
Yep, because of the area similarities, when I was looking up information on the Dense Run, that is actually the other, aside from, like, versions of mm-hmm. the Dense Run story, that is the other big story that kept popping up, is this lost silver
mm-hmm.
and this Blackbeard character, and I was like, maybe that's another one to cover.
Yeah.
Because I had never heard of
this. I haven't heard of it either. But that would be another interesting one for us to touch base on, because I didn't know that there were so many lost treasure stories so close to us.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things that I thought was interesting when I was researching the Dense Run is, like, so this is Civil War gold, and there's a ton of Civil War stories, but you have to also remember that Pennsylvania was one of the original 13 colonies. It was, like, one of the earlier settled areas. Mm-hmm. And as, like, and also it was sort of the Wild West for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, people who were smuggling stuff in, as, like, coastlines became more heavily managed and guarded by authorities, people pushed back.
Mm-hmm.
This became the place where they smuggled things out to, and then would go back for it later.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really thought about that until, like, I was reading about how they would do that. And, like, even, like, when you hear about, like, kind of, like, going, even though in this silver story, it wasn't the pirate, but even if you read some of the legends of the pirates, you think about pirates in tropical places.
Right.
Know, Pirates of the Caribbean. Like,
right.
Whatever, but they actually ranged as far north as Nova Scotia
mm-hmm.
and all the way down into South America.
Right, right.
And they would just constantly go up and down coastlines to avoid being caught, and they would bury things. And as things got more and more heated, and there was more pressure on them to be captured and arrested, they pushed further inland.
Right.
With their treasures.
Right.
To hide them.
Mm-hmm.
They would go...
It makes sense.
They would go off the coast up rivers
mm-hmm.
and bury stuff places. And then...
It makes sense.
Hide out mm-hmm. for a while.
So absolutely.
There's so much that I think there is still left. I mean, we've discovered a lot, but I think there's still so much that's left to be discovered, or that was just lost
mm-hmm.
in history.
Right. Right. Obviously, if... Now we're getting a little off topic talking mm-hmm. about pirates, but, like, obviously they're not going to, like, have good documentation of where they're keeping things. Like, nope. So God only knows
mm-hmm.
what's buried where.
Never know.
But even, like, you think about, like, you know... Our state was key in, you know, the French and Indian Wars, the American Revolution. Any war requires funding.
Uh-huh.
And any instance where, like, stores of gold or silver or whatever that the rebellion would have had a place, or the government at that time would have had a place, if anything got close to it, that they would have moved money around.
Right. Right.
So,
who knows where it ends up?
There's mm-hmm. lots of lore out there about things getting lost in commute.
Right.
You know,
it's not like they're quickly transporting money. Like, mm-hmm. so obviously the likelihood of it ending up somewhere else en route is likely.
Yeah. And this day and age, there were trains established, but once again, it was still Pennsylvania, especially as you got central and western. It was still a little bit of the Wild West.
Right.
And so you still had to be concerned about Indians. You still had to be concerned about,
mm-hmm.
You know, Confederate soldiers. You still had to be concerned about just bandits in general, like right. raiding trains.
Right.
So,
right. Clearly, you're hauling something that's worth value. Like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there's a lot of different factors, and part three, which I keep you guys a little bit in the dark.
I have not taken a look at.
Nope. We haven't skipped ahead either.
Part three gets into some of those intricacies and what the environment of was like in the state at that time, like different theories about like would that gold have actually been lost that way, or mm-hmm. would have it made more sense to do something like if they're gonna try to skirt the Confederate army, there's some theories about it making more sense to go one way or another, and so that's where some of the doubt comes in.
Okay.
So we'll get into like some of the different theories and stuff like that. So, as like honestly, my favorite part.
Yeah.
Is
we leave the best for last.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There might be some fun conversations during that one.
I'm going to have to watch what I say.
I feel like you were doing that today.
Mm-hmm.
That's why you've been quiet over there.
Mm-hmm. I could go down a rabbit hole, but I just don't want to. it would divert too much from the story.
Okay, hold it together, Ethan.
I will.
So also then veering off of a little separate story here. I know Meg has some updates on some of the past podcasts that we've touched base on, so we'll let Meg kind of take a run and give you guys some updates on her personal, you know, stories on some of the past legends and things that we have talked about.
Okay, so the very first episode we did was just super long, and totally apologize for that, but didn't really know where to cut it. Like to break it
and
up.
We were new to podcast land, so we just kind of went with it.
Yep. So it's on mountain lions, the Nittany lion, okay? And whether they're here or not, and there's like people who are adamant that there are no mountain lions left, and there are people who are adamant that they're here, and there are people who kind of like sit in between, like there's evidence that they're coming back over from the west, and like, you know, just by the nature of the animal, they're not going to be seen unless they want you to see them.
Correct.
So, and there's areas like in our state even today that are so remote, we would not, like even some of the most avid hikers and uh-huh. mountain climbers and things would just not go uh-huh. to those places. But mountain lions can.
Right.
So for those of you who don't know me, I'm the marketing director here at the Shawley Insurance Agency, but I also am a fine artist, and I love to paint, and I am involved with the Bellefonte Art Museum out towards State College. And so I volunteer there usually once or twice a quarter, and my work is also, actually it's going to be exhibited in one of the galleries there this month. But I was driving back, it was a few months back now, it was in late autumn, I was driving back from volunteering, and it was dusky, and I was on 192 going towards, I was just above like halfway down, so you know like where Bull Run Road is, mm-hmm. and there's that stretch that everybody flies on because it's like super straight and open, right?
Meg's like, I'm not saying
I'm
that
not
he did, but
to anything, but I'm just saying. And
that's
also,
what people do.
I've also heard stories about Josh and Ethan's pap on hunting mornings, mm-hmm. just flooring it and opening it up there. But so I'm driving back, and like it's. The light is very soft and it's dusk, and so there's a couple patches where there's a high tree line mm-hmm. and then a grassy hill kind of down to the road. So out of the corner of my eye, I see there's an animal, and so I slow way down mm-hmm. because I'm thinking it's a deer, and mm-hmm. I'm thinking, okay, where there's one, there's multiple, and they're gonna come out here,
right?
And just out, and it was brief, but I look at it and I'm like, that's not a deer. Mm-hmm. Like, it's the size of a deer, and it's not like this. It was really just a silhouette because it was sort of in the shadow of the tree, tree line. And I'm like, I could see that the leg was tawny color because the leg was in the sunlight, the front leg. I'm like, it's kind of the color of the deer, but it's got a long tail. And it's not fluffy. Like, you can tell a silhouette.
A sleek.
It's sleek.
Tail, yeah.
So it's not a bear. It's not big enough to be a bear. Like, bulky.
Yeah.
And it's definitely, like, a meaty, like, sleek, muscly animal. Right. But it's got a long tail.
Right.
And I'm like, and then as I'm looking, I'm trying to, like, look closer at it, but also not, like, veer off the road. It drops in the grass. Like, just drops. The whole thing.
Which cats do that.
Right. Just drops.
Yeah.
Into the tall, like, because there was still, like, taller brushy grass there. And it just drops into it. And I'm like, okay, so deers don't do that.
Right.
So it's, and they don't have a long tail.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure, like, what else has a long tail in this area?
Right.
Coyote, but it like
coyote tails are more bushy though.
Bushy. There was no bushiness to this silhouette.
Right.
So like I've always been like, maybe I was kind of like the maybe, but I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure I saw a mountain lion. It was bigger than like I've seen bobcats. It was not a bobcat, and of course it had a long tail.
Right. And obviously it was bigger than a house cat.
Yes. It was, I thought it was substantial. It was like, I was like, this is
you don't mistaken a deer. A cat for a house cat for a deer size.
No.
Yeah.
And I know, like, Diane Shelley, she passed away recently, but she lived up in there and she swore that there were two mountain lions on her land that she saw multiple times. Like, she swore by that. And I'm like, maybe. And then there was a gentleman that went to our church that hit something that was big enough to cause like $4,000 of damage on his car, but there was no blood, there was nothing, and it was not, he thought it was a deer, but it was not, there was no, it was tawny, and but it was low.
Well, and I feel like we live in Pennsylvania. You know when you see a deer. When people hit deer, like, you see it. Like, you see it at some point.
Yeah.
They're quick, but, like, if you hit it and it's able to run off, you still see it. I don't know why I'm struggling with this, but
if you hit a buck, you're going to get damaged, but you're also going to see those horns. Antlers.
Antlers.
Ethan's over there just like, cringing.
I am not a hunter.
I would have went with it.
I am still learning. But you would see that. So, like, this guy was like, well, I thought maybe I hit a doe. Because there was no...
Right.
But you hit a deer, there's blood. Right. There's hair, there's... Like, you hit a deer hard enough to cause $4,000 worth of damage to your car.
Right.
Like, and he had it was an SUV or a truck. And, like, wasn't, like, a small.
Right.
Like, that deer's going to be injured.
Yeah.
So, that was my first update. And I still, like...
Well, and I feel like for people who don't know you as well, like, I know you kind of went in to touch base on your, like, you're an artist, you know things. Meg's attention to detail. Like, so you will note, like, because you say, okay, I saw it briefly, but, and then go into all this detail. That is Meg. Like, Meg will look at something and be able to remember the color, the shape, the size. Like, all of that is somehow, like, I would not trust my own vision. I would be like, oh, wow, maybe I saw that, but me, I'd be terrible. But I feel like it holds more weight depending on who you're talking to. And your attention to detail is more spot on to the point of your being like, oh, okay, like, that's what I saw.
Well, it's kind of funny you say that because it's like my daughter, she, funny story, we were walking and she loves to pick up on she's kind of a mini me with the detail kind of stuff. She loves to pick on, up on different things. And another adult that was in our group was talking to me, and she's like, "Mom, Mom, Mom, Mom." And I'm like, "Izzy, I am speaking to someone. Please wait. I just please be patient. Please don't interrupt. Please wait." And she's like, "Never mind. You missed it." And I finished the conversation. I said, "I didn't miss it." And she's like, "I wanted to show you that door." I said, "I didn't miss it. You liked the yellow door on the gray house that had the turret on it, like the Rapunzel Tower. And you liked that yellow door because either it was bright yellow or it had a very intricate stained glass window on it, or both." And she looked at me and her eyes got huge and she goes, "How did you see all that?" And I said, "Honey, I'm a mom. I see it all." And she has been a little bit wary.
She's like, "Oh man, I gotta pay attention to what I'm doing now.
We see things."
Yeah.
But I do. I really pick up detail in a very brief amount of time. I think some of that is because I'm artistic.
Right, right.
So, yeah. So, like, and I wasn't like somebody, I mean, deep down, like, would it be really cool to me if they were back? Yeah, I think that would be awesome. And it would solve, like, there's a problem with coyotes here. Mm-hmm. And there's a problem with coyotes here because the alpha predator that took care of the coyotes was killed off and pushed out.
Right.
So, like, in some ways, it would balance, honestly,
absolutely,
balance out nature better. And when you actually, like, dig into what this animal acts like, they're not just they avoid humans at all costs. So if they're on your farm trying to get to your animals, it's because they're starving or something.
Right.
Like 99% of the time, they're where you'll never find them or see them.
Right.
And if they have food, they will never wander outside of that area.
Right. They have their territories.
They will not go into populated areas and wander through them unless they are...
Well, and like we talked about in our original podcast, like, there's usually one male to one territory.
150
so
miles.
The likelihood of you seeing them when they don't want to be seen either.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now when I drive through there, I'm always like...
Keep your eyes peeled, people.
I just want to see if I see this again. Because It was a short, and I will reiterate, it was a short amount of time, but I am somebody who takes in a lot of detail, even in brief amounts of time, and I'm like...
Well, even the characteristics that you saw, you, like, it was there, and then it drops down. Like, that's a cat-like characteristic.
Yeah, and I could even ignore that I saw a sleek, longer tail, and just be like, well, maybe I was mistaken, and I saw a coyote. But for it to, like, just... drop down like it was crouching.
Right. Yeah.
When my headlights were coming at it.
Right.
Basically.
Yeah.
It and my car was passing where it was, and I was like, huh.
Yeah, that's
different.
That's interesting.
That's different.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is.
It's fun that you saw that though, after we like touch base on it.
Yeah.
And you know, and again, guys, if any of you have experiences on any of our past podcasts, current, past, whatever, definitely let us know if you have stories like that. You know, we want to know, we want to hear them, and we want to share them with you guys.
So the second update I have is, I think it was our third episode, it was the ghost,
I cannot keep track,
the ghost of White Deer Pike. I did this Saturday. I delivered my artwork to Bellefonte Art Museum. And of course, you know, we are a little crazy right now because we've moved. And I don't know where anything is. So I'm the panic mom who's like going to get Easter candy for their kids' Easter baskets the day before Easter. And also realizing I can't find their Easter baskets. So we improvised. And I bought... I actually bought them little suitcases at Aldi.
Which, that was perfect.
Because, you know, we travel up to the Finger Lakes a lot to see my family. So I'm, like, going, instead of going straight home from there, I'm going into Lewisburg to pick up Easter candy and these things. And I thought, I'm going to take this mile run exit and just see what they're talking about. So the couple, I think they were in, I don't remember if they were in the early 90s. But anyway, the couple that saw this ghost, that was the one witness that had this experience coming from Lock Haven University, and they were in traffic. It was dark. It was rainy. It was kind of misty. And they got stuck in traffic, and they decided to take that exit. And the thing about that exit is there's no amenities. So once you get off, there's like no gas stations. There's nothing. And that is still true. But they got off, and they took a left, and they said, I'm pretty sure they said they encountered this woman, this ghost, after the first or second turn. So I went down that, and I don't know if it's changed a lot since they went, but there are now, and it's still rugged, but there are now cabins, like hunting cabins, like camp cabin kind of things, on both sides of the road. Some of them are further back. Some of them are pretty close, but almost the whole stretch.
Yeah.
There's a few spots where it's emptier, but in the area that they were talking about, it was definitely fairly... there were cabins, one after another, around both of the first and second curves. So, when I was driving, it was about 5 o'clock, and it was rainy, it was misty, it was foggy. It was still lightish.
All the eerie.
Right. I mean, it was still weather. It wasn't like pitch dark, so they were in the dark.
Right.
But even in that, I could see how if you were in the rain, it was foggy, whatever, you could honestly mistake an actual person for a ghostly figure if your headlights hit it in the fog.
Right.
Like, I was driving down that road, and I, once again, saw a deer. Like, this one was a deer. It came in front of me, and it was close, but not where I would hit it. I just saw it coming across. But I saw it initially in the fog, and it looked like a ghost deer in the fog. Like, it looked spooky.
The fog can distort things.
Yeah, and I was like, what is that? And then I'm like, oh. So I slowed way down, and it went across, it like bounded across the road into the woods on the other side. And like, I could see how in the dark, in the fog, in the rain, if somebody...
You're also on like a spooky, kind of deserted road. Yeah. Like, you're in the mood of like, ooh, eerie things are happening. Yeah.
And if somebody from one of those cabins was out, and even if they were wearing light colored clothing, your headlights hit that in the dark, it's gonna look all white.
It's gonna illuminate them,
and it's gonna look like they're glowing. And I mean, I don't know how to explain, like, the poof, the light disappears, but you know, fog really does distort a lot. That is why some areas have fog days, you know, where they shut everything down because the fog's so heavy, because you can't see well. I mean, once again, there's part of me that's like, I love the spooky and the folklore, but I could really kind of
see you how you could debunk that one.
Debunk that.
Yeah. I don't know. We've never driven.
I've been on it a bunch of times, younger, fishing with Dad. That's like a huge stretch for trout fishing.
Were there cabins and houses?
They're all hunting cabins. Yeah. Okay. They've probably been there, I would say, since the 70s and 80s. Yes.
Okay.
Some of them are like really old and kind of decrepit, but there are several now that are there that are actually really nice, that look more like new constructions. So.
But yes, it's a pretty popular stretch of fishing for trout fishing. I mean, like I said, Dad and I have, and so Josh have fished it numerous times.
I'm trying to remember.
I think they said it was in the 90s. I'm
trying to remember the time of year. Like,
and I would have been back in there in the 90s.
So, like, I don't know when fishing. When's fishing stuff? So that's more spring. Because, like, fishermen get up at all goofy hours to...
I mean, back when I was little, you had to get, like, out there at dark. You were standing there. Fishing didn't open until 7 or 8. And But that's morning.
That's not evening.
It was like 50, 60 people lining just that little spot of the creek, just waiting because everybody secured their spot. So like it, that's a
pretty. But that's spring and that's morning. Whereas we're talking fall.
No, it's all day. But then people will fish it all year until the season goes out.
So can they fish in the fall?
I don't know exactly. Well, I mean, yeah, you can fish up to a certain.
I don't know all the rules.
I don't know. Sometime in the end of fall or. Actually, it might be like the new year. I forget when the fishing season goes out. But like it's very close to like the opening of fishing again. Like it only goes out for a little while and they restock some of the streams. And that's a stocked stream. Well, it was at one point a stocked stream. So, like, it's heavily traveled even, more than people think.
Even if it wasn't fishing, I mean, you think about the camp that we go to, like...
Mm-hmm. We've traveled that road. You've been on it.
Even in off hunting season...
I'm so directionally challenged, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm. Like, even when it's off hunting season, people stay at it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
True. So maybe it was just somebody staying at their family cabin, even if they weren't there for fishing, mm-hmm. so to speak, but, like, and just took... a walk at night or was out at night to see.
Well, and who knows? In the fall, like it's starting to get darker a little bit earlier, so it could have been, you know, at a time where people are out anyway, and who knows.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting. I still like to go the spooky route though too.
I want to
believe that things happen and people see things and it's just, I don't know.
But yeah, I was driving that and I was like, I really don't want to debunk this, but I can really debunk this.
Like, yeah, you're like, I can see how.
And the fact that I could not find any other story. So if somebody has another story,
that would be good.
This like woman that disappears into a ball of light, up into a tree, or whatever, in that,
or
in
even just balls of light. Like you don't even have to see a person. Any story.
Yeah, I mean, please prove us wrong.
Even if it's not you, even if it's a hearsay story, that would be fun. Yeah, that would be interesting though. But I could see like fog really does mess with stuff. Like fog is a scary beast.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see how that would, and if there's lots of houses and stuff, like seeing somebody in the distance in the fog is going to be kind of spooky.
And when I was driving that road, there were tons of people there. Like Ethan was saying, like there was trucks and cars lined up. Like
is it this weekend?
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure today was the opening day, or this weekend was trout opening, maybe. Or it happened recently. Like I said, in fishing season, the place is nuts.
Yeah, there were cars pulled off into the woods everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're probably
all of those cabins had cars parked in their drives and parking areas. And when I pulled off and went to the left, to the right, there's actually a bridge.
Okay.
That had people all over it. Nice. I was like, what's going on?
You're like, what is this?
I actually, at first I looked at it, I'm like, is that an accident? Because there were so many people on the bridge. And then I remember, I'm like, oh, it's spring. They're probably fishing. I don't really know when that happens either, but I know it's spring. So yeah. I'm like, somebody would have to pay me money to stand on a bridge in cold, wet weather to get a fish that probably is going to be thrown right back.
Right, and if you're... just right next to like tons of people, like that doesn't seem fun to me. Like, you're all fishing for the same thing. Yeah, like,
you're not supposed to talk. I remember
hunting is worse. And you,
I remember being on a boat with your dad. I don't know if Josh and I were engaged yet or we're still dating, but apparently I was talking too much, and your dad's like, you need to be quiet. And I'm like, oh.
Sorry.
The fish can hear you. Did not know that.
Go fishing or hunting with Ethan, though. He can't keep his mouth shut.
I can for fishing and hunting.
Not according to your mom when you were little.
When I was little, but now.
She said there was no way you would ever see a deer with the way that your mouth went.
Now it's not a problem.
Now you just fall asleep.
Yep, and wake up and magically the deer's there. It's been pretty productive for me.
It's worked out for you.
Multiple times.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thanks for hanging in with us. And again, if you have been with us this whole time and you know our past podcasts, or you know, you listen to any of them and, you know, something triggers your memory or you know of a story that we touched on, definitely give us a shout out. You can email us at info@shaliagency.com. You know, let us know your stories. Let us know what you want us to touch base on. If you have any of this Blackbeard and his silver, you know, maybe we can touch base on that if anybody has any more information on that one. But, you know, we look forward to your input and like hearing from you guys. And, you know, it just makes this a little bit more interactive, and that's something that we enjoy. So definitely touch base with us if you have anything like that. But we will be back next time with part three, where we kind of dig into all the doubt behind the story and all the different, you know, controversies, and it might be an interesting one. So definitely stay tuned for that. Mm-hmm. So as always, thanks guys, and we'll touch base next time.
Yep, we'll see you later.